Communications disruption can mean only one thing: invasion.
You must contact me.
Negotiation? We've lost all communication.
Hello and welcome to the CO Bibble's Babble Bubble program on this fine jazzerific weekend for everybody. I don't know why I decided to go with more of a cool vibe to start off the show rather than my usual loud and zany self, but it just seemed kind of like the suave thing to do because we got a suave topic ahead of us today. Or maybe not. I don't know. I think it's pretty suave. Anyhow, yes, we're back into a Star Wars conversation, because this is indeed a Star Wars podcast, a Star Wars prequels podcast, to be exact. And I just want to thank everyone who has been on the show for the very massive and extensive project of Disney Era's prequels. Special shout out to Kay Harmonizer, to the mysterious Mr. L, and to Claire Stribbs from the Imperial Senate podcast. It was a fun time recording all those and diving into little spatterings of my childhood from the Disney front. But as I said, this is a Star Wars show, and so it's about high time we wrap back around and discuss Star Wars. Now, one thing that drives the content for a lot of other podcasts out there, a lot of other really fantastic podcasts out there, I should say, is the new releases of things. So books, movies, TV shows, video games, etc., and reactions to that. And I generally, as those of you who listen regularly, I generally steer away from being a reaction show because I'm trying to be a retroactive show. So looking back at things that have already been made, because I'm stuck to this window of 1999 to 2005 while talking about episodes 1, 2, and 3. That being said, you know, there's times there's stuff that are tied into that that warrant some sort of conversation, or, as in the case of this week's episode, there are things that can inspire a conversation, and so I want to point to the video game Squadrons that's going to be coming out this fall. There's a lot of hype surrounding it, as in, you know, this is the first real Star Wars Starfighter simulator. You know, we've had kind of this third-person view of sorts when you're controlling ships in the Star Wars Battlefront games or Rogue Squadron or anything along those lines. But this really is fully immersive with all the bells, the whistles, and the buttons. And I guarantee with 100% I'm going to be horrible at this game. But Reed, you may be asking, I'm familiar with that game that's coming out. That announcement was a while ago, and I've already heard everything there is to hear about it, so I think I'm just going to stop. But wait, I tell you, the listener, hold on, because I'm not going to talk about what that game is going to be, what that game has been teased to us and shown to us is going to be, which is a battle between the New Republic and what's left of the dying Empire. No. This is what I wish this game was about. I wish this game went full-on committed to what the Battlefront series did in giving us different eras. Yes, the most famous and well-known of the starfighters are the ones surrounding the original trilogy, right beforehand, right afterwards, too, when you're looking at Rogue One. Rebels, Solo, right afterwards, when you're looking at Alphabet Squadron, Battlefront 2, so on and so forth. And yes, TIE Fighters and X-Wings, they're super cool. But I want to look specifically at the Clone Wars era, the prequels era. If we were taking this game, picking it up, and placing it during the Clone Wars, what ships would we use? And I actually posed this question to the Imperial Senate podcast in, I guess, would be their second to most recent episode, if you're listening to this on the release date of July 11th. But I don't know when you're listening to it, so I can't tell you the episode number comparative to that. But I asked them, like, oh, pick five starships that you'd like to see from the Republic or the Separatists put in a game of this environment. And they gave some great answers. You know, obviously, the ARC fighter is fantastic for the Republic, Jedi starfighters, so on and so forth. But there was a noticeable hole for starships of the Separatists, of the Confederacy of Independent Systems. And a point that the host of that show drew attention to, and it's very accurate, is that, you know, the majority of the Separatist fleet that isn't, you know, the big cruisers or stuff like that are, they themselves are droids. You know, it's a droid gunship. Not that it's a gunship piloted by droids, but it's a gunship that has, that is in itself a droid. Same with Vulture droids, kind of the main starfighter corps. And also with the little tri-droids, the tri-canon droids, very small. But they are autonomous thinking beings. They're not piloted, so it wouldn't necessarily fit within the parameters of the Squadrons game, where you play a pilot and you are interfacing with your starship the way a pilot would. But, you know, if you do a little bit of digging, you really see there is a vast array of starships in the Confederacy of Independent Systems that I believe deserve a little bit of praise. So for that reason, I decided to take the format of Squadrons, in which you have four different types of StarCraft, and give it its appropriate. So that's the fighter, the interceptor, the support ship, and the bombers. And I have all four from a Separatist perspective being piloted by an actual pilot. Now, what would this look like in the game? Would you have a pilot droid and you see little droid hands moving around? Or would it be something like you're playing, you know, actual aliens or people who are members of the Separatist Alliance? Obviously, the droid army is the most well-known. But you can look at, in the Clone Wars TV show, like the Umbaran arc, that there are Umbarans fighting the fight. Or you can look at what happens on Onderon, where there are the people of Onderon, some of them are on the other side. So it's not just this whole droids v. clone thing, you can kind of shake it up a little bit. And, you know, it's not just the B1 battle droids, but Magna Guards, for instance, the cool guys with the kind of gafty sticks with electricity on either side, who are Count Grievous's bodyguards, effectively. Maybe those guys could pilot ships, you know, so you can still have that degree of customizing your pilot, customizing your ship, so on and so forth. But anyhow, I think the best place to start is, of course, with the fighter, and the New Republic comparison to that, which we see in the actual video game, is, of course, the X-Wing, the classic Star Wars ship, a very recognizable image to just about anyone, whether you've seen the movies or not. And so I actually had the hardest time with the fighter and interceptor classes, because there's two or three different ships that could fall under either of them. But I made my decision solely based on kind of look and how we had seen them in the films or either the Clone Wars. So the X-Wings comparison is going to be the Rogue class starfighter. Now, you're probably not too familiar with that name, but you would recognize it the moment you saw it. So the Rogue class starfighter was first introduced in Revenge of the Sith, a very late ad in the film. You can't really see it that well, but it's kind of zipping around in the background. It got its sort of full flushed out explanation or conversation around it, I should say, during the Clone Wars TV show, when Cad Bane is doing the whole holocron heist storyline and is kidnapping younglings, children, he asks his mysterious benefactor, Count Lord Sidious, which, as we all know, is Chancellor Palpatine, for a rogue-class starfighter. So it's known for being having elite weapons. Some are equipped with cloaking devices and the works. And the reason I put this more with an X-Wing rather than an A-Wing is it's kind of clunky. So the best way I can describe it, because in your head you're probably thinking, well, what does this look like? You know, it may sound a bit familiar if you remember watching the Clone Wars arc or seeing it elsewhere. But effectively, imagine if you took a flying saucer and you squished it flat and it squished out on either side. So you're looking at kind of like an oblong shape with the cockpit at the front. So it's sort of an oval on its side, cockpit is in the middle of the long side, front looking forward, and then to the left and right of it, on either side of this oblong shape, are these kind of these two massive jets with laser cannons on either side. And the cockpit juts out a bit, so it sort of has that classic tri look that we see in so many Star Wars ships where, you know, you have engine/cannons, cockpit engine/cannons, kind of like the way a TIE fighter looks or a Jedi starfighter, so on and so forth, with that basic formula, but it's more squished and flattened. It kind of resembles sort of the cars that people were dreaming up in the 1950s would look like. So it's got that kind of promised, you know, mid-20th century obsession. Like this is what Chevrolet is going to look like. Think of promotional imagery and materials from Chevrolet, from Ford, to have that kind of sleek look, you know, where it's kind of, what are the muscle cars of the future looking like? And that's what the Rogue-class starship looks like here. The reason why I've been hinting, oh, you can see it somewhere else, but I just haven't named it yet because I wanted to save it for last, is a version of this starship shows up in The Mandalorian very briefly. We don't even really see it lift off and get ready for flight. And the place you see it is in one of my favorite episodes of The Mandalorian, the episode The Gang. This is when spoiler alert if you haven't seen the show, but I assume that if you're listening to a Star Wars prequels podcast, you've seen the biggest piece of Star Wars medium out there. At least as far as TV show. You know, I have more faith with people saying The Mandalorian than saying all the Clone Wars. So, anyhow, it's the episode called The Gang. That's when the Mandalorian teams up with some of his former criminal partners and some new guys. It's got Bill Burr. It's got Nymphadora Tonks, that actress, in it. And anyhow, he gets double-crossed at the end, crosses them back, so on and so forth, kind of a heist film, if you will. And as he is leaving the space station, where there's the guy who hired him and his best friend, the guy who hired him is like, okay, let's double-cross him. And the ship raises up from the platform, about to pursue the Razor Crest, that's the Mandalorian ship, and blow it out of the sky. And that ship is actually a modified version of the Rogue-class starfighter. Unfortunately, we don't get to see it fly because it's at this time that the New Republic pilots, played by three directors of the series, come in and they blow up the whole space station, that ship included. But it's a nice little reference because it's funny, when I watched the show, I hadn't dived into, Clone Wars era spaceships as much as I have now. And so I remember seeing that aesthetic looks familiar, but I couldn't pinpoint it. And that's what it is. It's a Rogue-class starfighter. And when you watch the Mandalorian behind the scenes, I think it's episode 9 or 7. Yeah, there's only 8. There's no episode. It must be, yeah, second to last episode. Episode 7. Maybe 8. I don't know. You can see the sketch that was for this ship that was originally made for Revenge of the Sith. So that's kind of these classic callbacks. You watch that behind the scenes Mandalorian show. So much of what they point to is, well, this is what happened in, you know, the original trilogies, and this is kind of a sequel to that, so let's try to honor George Lucas's vision from, you know, the original trilogy. But, you know, thankfully there's guys like Dave Filoni and John Knoll and Matthew Wood who have a rich history and understanding of the Star Wars prequels that they're able to make these connections and make these little Easter eggs. And, you know, of course, and, you know, I'm going totally off topic here, but as I've mentioned in the past, if you want to see the single greatest argument for the Star Wars prequels, you just need to watch episode, it's either 2 or 3, and Dave Filoni talks about how important The Phantom Menace is as a film. And I guess Revenge of the Sith too, because he put a Rogue-class starfighter in there. And it's also important for many other reasons than that as well. But anyhow, yes, the only named Rogue-class starfighter we know of is the Xanadu Blood. That is a special tricked-out one that Cad Bane flew. Next, I want to move over to the Interceptor, which we're thinking of, well, these guys are sort of the small, quick ships. They may not pack the best firepower, but they're very hard to hit, and they're kind of like annoyances, in a way. And so, in the Squadrons video game, that's given to the A-Wing, which has always been probably my favorite Rebel ship, and I love that that ship gets a lot of attention in the TV show Rebels. That's what Phoenix Squadron effectively is for a long time. So anyhow, the comparison I'm going with here, what I would call the Confederate Interceptor, is the Genovex class fan blade starfighter. Now this thing is a bit goofy looking. And it's kind of similar to that ship that Count Dooku flew around with that solar sail. So it's got that same familiarity where you're looking at, you know, here's a tiny little cockpit and a big sort of sail that opens up to help with kind of intergalactic travel. Pardon me, intragalactic travel. Nobody's actually leaving the galaxy in Star Wars just yet. Anyhow, this was the ship that Asajj Ventress flew during the Battle of Sullust. And, you know, I know what you may be thinking. Well, if it's got a big fan protruding from the side, how is that going to make it this quick little machine similar to an A-Wing? Wouldn't that be a good, you know, better for the X-Wing? And so that's kind of where I was on the fence between these two in particular. But I really like this as the A-Wing because it really is a zipping around ship. And, you know, I'm trying to also derive the ship's characteristics from the people who flew them. So Asajj Ventress flew the Genifex class Fanblade, so I can see her flying an A-Wing, because they had sort of, her fighting style is very light and nimble, quick in, quick out, and so I would assume that's the type of ship she would want to fly that can best replicate that. And if in the case of the Rebellion, that'd be an A-Wing, in the case of this, it would be the Genifex class Fanblade Starfighter, which is super cool. It actually was introduced in the 2D Gendry Tartakovsky Clone Wars show when Asajj Ventress was introduced. And so Dave Filoni and company were nice enough to bring it back in to the 3D Clone Wars. Next we have the support ship. Now, in the game, and Star Wars Medium in general, the Rebels have a super cool ship filling up that, and that's the U-Wing, which was introduced in Rogue One, of course, but we've since seen it in other materials, including existing video games, literature, Star Wars Rebels, the TV show it showed up eventually, Alphabet Squadron, so on and so forth. Now, this is kind of hard because the ships that would fill in this blank perfectly for the Separatists are droid ships already. Like, the droid gunship is kind of similar to this. Or some of these droid transport ports that are armed with turbo cannons. However, you know, since we wanted to be piloted, I had to dig around a bit to figure out what I thought was best. I really like this, and that is the Sheethi-Ped or Sheethi-Ped class transport shuttle. Now, I know, yes, that puts more emphasis on a transport ship than a support ship, but the U-Wing is a transport, and the shuttle can be done as well. This shuttle was first introduced during The Phantom Menace. It is the ship that Newt Gunray and his cronies land on Naboo to formally take it over, starting the terrible tragedy that really made C.O. Bibble a political hero, even though Padme Amidala gets all the credit. Actually, no, C.O. Bibble didn't do anything in that, other than complain. And we have a podcast named after him now. What do you know? But yeah, so this little transport shuttle, I'll give you another place where we see it, and that is in Rebels. This is the ship that becomes the Phantom II. So the Phantom, as you may recall, that's the little detachable ship off the Ghost. And so the first one goes bye-bye, and they're not actively looking for a new one until Zeb, Rex, Kanan, and Ezra make it to Angamar, where there is still a Separatist garrison hanging out in these ships. So they end up taking one of them and making it be able to attach to the Ghost easily. It's the Phantom II. Basically, imagine kind of like a high-tech-looking shoebox with more curvature around it with a dorsal fin on the top. And that's basically this ship. Like I said, the reason I made it a U-Wing comparison to support is because it does transport people. It can have up to 8 passengers when you include one pilot. And it can be equipped to be a good fighting machine. Generally, they don't come with turbo lasers or anything like that, but we have seen that be the case. Obviously, the one that becomes the Phantom II in Star Wars Rebels does have that capability. In the TV show, The Clone Wars, there's some references that, oh, the ship is not armed, but other cases that, oh, it's been duped out a bit. And so, you know, it's not necessarily carrying a bunch of firepower, but it can hold its own in a fight. And I imagine it's probably a little more maneuverable than a U-Wing as well, so it may be an upgrade up there. Next, we have the Bombers, which, of course, in the Squadrons video game for the Rebel Alliance, that is the Y-Wing for the Empire. It's the TIE Bomber. Two very recognizable ships right there. Now, thankfully, this work was more or less already done for me, because when Star Wars Battlefront 2, the original one, came out, they needed to make starships for all the space battles. Now, they kind of cheated, because what they used for the quick starship and the slow starship, effectively, was a Vulture droid and that Tri-droid. So both of those are autonomous-thinking droid ships. But they did throw in one classic ship in there that actually has a pilot, and that's the Belbulab, B-E-L-B-U-L-L-A-B, the Belbulab 22 Starfighter. And they made that the Bomber. And the place where we see that is actually General Grievous' ship. So it's very recognizable in Revenge of the Sith. That's the one where Grievous tries to run away and get to the ship. Obi-Wan and Grievous have their final duel, and the ship is just left on the platform before Obi-Wan eventually takes it for himself. But since it had that clunky look, the designers of Battlefront 2 said, oh, let's go ahead and make that the Bomber, because there isn't an obvious droid bomb ship at the point of making that game. So I'm keeping that comparison because we needed to have a bomber in there. And, you know, I could totally believe Grievous flying some clunky asthmatic bombing craft to begin with, so there's no complaints from me in making that jump. And it definitely has that more industrial look to it. We see it, there was a Lego set released for it, maybe 5 years ago, a bit longer than that even, probably 6 or 7, where it comes with the ship, it comes with Grievous, his droid, and more importantly, it comes with Nadar, the little Mon Calamari Jedi, who Grievous treats very poorly, we'll say. He's not a very kind house guest to Nadar and Kit Fisto when they come in. But anyhow, that set's going to be re-released, or the set for the ship itself. It's not going to have as many minifigures, but it's one of those playable things that when you buy it, you can then play as it in the Skywalker Saga Lego video game that's coming out in just a couple months' time. The name of Grievous's Starfighter, it actually had one. It's called the Soulless One, which is super cool as a wordplay, in my opinion, because either implying that there's the Soulless 2, the Soulless 3, or the Soulless 4, or Soulless 1, as itself is an existing noun. And the question, does General Grievous have a soul? He's got a heart and lungs, but other than that, he's just a robot man. So I think he has a soul. Maybe not a kind one, but one nonetheless. So those are the four categories right there. But there was another ship I wanted to throw in. And this kind of also stemmed from just general speculation that Squadrons will have, being it that it's EA, it will either have DLC or expandable content on multiple releases, like they've done with their version of Battlefront. But I think they're going to throw in a new class of ship to complete the full alphabet squadron, because we have X, A, U, Y. But I want to add a new ship grouping called the Devastators. And in this case, this would be a B-Wing. That would be really tricky to fly. Also, with those super powerful cannons, it could be a boss, you know, mad boss thing to fly. But they're very clunky, and maybe not the best for every single type of battle. When you read the Alphabet Squadron's novels, you see the B-Wings bring in a lot of positivity there, but there's a lot of weak spots too. So I had to find what's something that packs a massive punch, but, you know, may not be the best handling ship. And this is the Nantex-class Territorial Defense Starfighter. So this was made by the same people who made the Genovex-class Fanblade Starfighter. So it's made by Geonosians. And it was introduced in Attack of the Clones. And it shows up in one Clone Wars episode in a flashback as well. Now, it's classified as a Territorial Defense Starfighter, but it should be able to, you know, break atmosphere and hold its own there. It just may not be able to jump into hyperspace, but that seems to be the case, or that is the case with pretty much most Imperial TIEs to begin with. What the Nantex looks like as you may remember seeing him floating in the background sometime between the battle in the Geonosian arena and the duel with Count Dooku. What they look like is there's a big... It's basically two planes, and by planes I mean flat plane, not a plane like an aircraft. Just want to make that clear, since we're talking about StarCraft, I'm not talking about aircraft right now. Though in this case, this operated more like a plane than a spaceship. So it's sort of two long planes that start wide in the front and get skinny. Wide in the back and get skinny into the front. In the middle are the cannons, which is like an orb. At the very top, that's where the pilot goes. It's kind of a doofy-looking thing. And I don't know if it was based on any particular thing, but if you're looking at it from a certain angle, it does look like a beak, an open beak. So that's what you should picture, the top and the bottom, with the round orb and a major singular laser cannon pointing forward. And the way that we see this ship used is not just in the rapid fire, but kind of long. That's my side effects. And that's kind of the comparison I sort of see when lining it up against a B-Wing, because, yeah, the B-Wing has some quick fire, but really its most devastating trait is the singular ion cannon from the front. Anyhow, that wraps up what I had to talk about when it came to Separatist Starfighters. So, you know, if you listen to the show, let me know which one would you want to fly if Squadrons does expand to include the prequels, which I really hope it does. I know for me, I would most likely do best in the transport shuttle, just because I know that when I get the actual game of what they will have, I'll mostly be a U-Wing pilot, because that seems to be the easiest to fly. I don't know. I could be wrong. I guarantee the A-Wing's going to be too fast for me, though. I can suffer from nausea sometimes, and I know the first time I play this game, I'm going to have a little bucket by the side. Anyhow, per usual, I hope that everybody is being safe out there. You know, don't forget to wear your mask when you're out in public. And don't get shamed into doing something because you're being paranoid if you're not doing it. You know, so you can't be too careful at this stage. Worst case scenario, or best case scenario, what we actually want us to happen is to look back in retrospect and feel, oh, okay, it wasn't that bad. But I'm glad I prepared for it as if it was. It's been fun being able to talk to everyone once more about Star Wars content. As much as I do love the Disney stuff and the DreamWorks stuff from last episode, this is what the show is very much the base on. And I promise to keep the show Star Wars focused more often than not, though I do have these little forays into kind of playing with the 1999 to 2005 window. Anyhow, stay cool out there, folks, both literally and metaphorically, and we'll catch you next time.
Det her er nu ikke været nødvendigt med det forbud.